The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good afternoon. My name is John Cavanna. I'm the director of the Institute for Policy Studies here in Washington. And we are an organization which has given an award to Judge Guzman. And so I just wanted to say a word of welcome to you all, also a word of thanks to the Washington College of Law. My institute, the Institute for Policy Studies, was the institute where Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt worked 29 years ago, two people who were killed by agents of the Pinochet government in a case that ended up with Judge Guzman. And so we have been pursuing justice in that case and in the case of hundreds, thousands in Chile who were disappeared, were tortured, were killed under the Pinochet regime. Our Human Rights Selection Committee, which includes Joe Eldridge of American University, selected Judge Guzman not only because of his remarkable work on behalf of victims of the dictatorship in Chile, but because his work, his two indictments of Pinochet, have given a sense of courage, of a different future for victims of dictators all around the world. So we are thrilled to have given this award. Also, having had the pleasure of spending a day and a half with Judge Guzman, you are also in for a treat of a remarkable human being. And I also finally just wanted to say we at the Institute treasure our collaboration with the Washington College of Law. You, and I know many of you here, are students, some are professors. We have collaborated with you on a number of events around the search for justice in Chile and against other dictators, and we have found the collaboration one of the most fruitful of any of our collaborations with other institutions. And I particularly want to thank your Dean, Claudio Grossman, who has brought leadership to this partnership and to this work and to the search for justice. And so we were thrilled when we selected Judge Guzman to be able to collaborate in these events. Thank you very much, Dean Grossman.
Well, thank you very much. We also treasure the cooperation with institutions like yours. We live in a newer world. In the past, academic institutions will investigate, put in libraries the result of their findings and train students. Now, with the internet, with think tanks, with the groups that pursue different objectives, investigation and learning and teaching and service are not any longer the domain exclusively of universities. And only those then academic institutions that will partner with important actors in the community will be able to fully satisfy the new challenges that are created with this world where borders have less meaning and barriers have less meaning and so forth. So we are enriched by these associations and cooperation. It is now also my pleasure to introduce and welcome the Honorable Judge Juan Guzman. Juan Guzman was appointed to a bench in 1972 by President Salvador Allende. He was later elevated to a Court of Appeals for the city of Talca and then to a Santiago Court of Appeals on the eve of Chile's democratic transition. Judge Guzman has sought to secure justice for victims of human rights abuses and strengthen the rule of law in Chile. In 1990, he was chosen by lottery to preside over the case of an ex-intelligence official accused of murdering a union worker during General Pinochet's 17-year-old dictatorship. In 1998, on Spain's request, Pinochet was arrested in London on murder charges. The same year, the Santiago Court of Appeals appointed Judge Guzman as the chief investigating magistrate into human rights violations committed during the Pinochet dictatorship. After 503 days in detention in the United Kingdom, the ex-dictator was found unfit to face extradition to Spain and returned to Chile in March 2000. Accordingly, Judge Guzman moved rapidly and filed a motion with the court to strip Pinochet of the senatorial immunity from prosecution in connection with a killing spree, the so-called caravans of death, where an helicopter of the will go to different cities, and every time the helicopter will leave, people would have been shot and killed in, and disappeared in different cities of the country. Over more than 70 opponents of the military government were then executed. Many legal experts predicted that Pinochet would remain forever out of the reach of justice. Yet, months later, General Pinochet was stripped of his immunity as a result of Judge Guzman's new interpretation of the Pinochet-sponsored amnesty law. Democratically elected government of Chile never passed an amnesty law. It's also, those who have passed amnesty law have found that you cannot put a stop to violations of human rights. People pursue justice, and they will continue to fight. Find ways in which they do that, even in countries like Uruguay, where they did this through a referendum that is called for justice all the time. I mean, people want an investigation and justice of the situations that have occurred in their country. Judge Guzman successfully argued that since many of the victims' bodies were still missing, the crime should be considered ongoing kidnappings, not covered by the country's amnesty law. This is the figure of delito continuado, a continuous crime. In December 2000, Judge Guzman formally charged General Pinochet with kidnapping and placed him under house arrest. The Supreme Court of Chile later dropped those charges on the grounds of Pinochet's health. In December 2004, Judge Guzman indicted Pinochet again on charges in connection with Operation Condor, a conspiracy of by six South American regimes in the 90s to hunt down and kill opponents to dictatorship in the region. However, the appeals court also accepted that the general was not mentally fit enough to be prosecuted over Operation Condor. This issue of the mentally fitness has some ground. I think that Pinochet never distinguished very well about evil and good and that type of thing. So certainly an argument could be made about the things, if that's the legal standard, I would say. You all should know that yesterday the Chilean Supreme Court stripped Pinochet of his immunity in the Riksbank scandal, allowing for prosecution of, among other charges, tax fraud. This to hope that the disappearance of money will not be the only accusation that we will be saying, because it, to a certain extent, or to, for those who care, indeed the disappearance of human beings is more important than the disappearance of money. But Judge Guzman retired from the Santiago Court of Appeal in April 2005 and was recently appointed Dean of the Law School at Central University in Santiago. We have strong associations with the University of Chile. I don't know why some people have interest in Chile. As a dean, I have said I cannot resist initiatives taken by people here. It could have been other countries. We have a summer law program in Chile. We're starting a magister program with the University of Chile, and we have a flow of students and faculty. But now that you are a dean, Judge Guzman, and knowing your resilience and determination, I think we better start planning what we're going to do together. We look forward to discussing with you how to strengthen the ties and collaboration between our two institutions. You should also know that in addition of to Judge Guzman embodying these important qualities of justice, of pursuing justice, of continuing undeterred to find the truth and justice and reparation, his memoir, En el borde del mundo, Memorias del juez que procesó a Pinochet, is now a bestseller in Chile, and that says that's very important. There were times in Chile where people did not want to hear about that thing, this thing. So it's not only a recognition to your own accomplishments, but the fact that there is a growing maturity and a need to cope with the issues that sometimes in a misguided fashion are called issues of the past. And we all know that the history was never about the past, it's about the future. That's why we always fight about history, not because we want to unbury things, but the things, the way in which we handle history dictate the type of society in which we want to live. Now, today Judge Guzman will speak of the evolution of the judiciary in Chile, an evolution in which he had so much to do, and the challenges in successfully bringing Pinochet to trial. Muy bienvenido aquí a la universidad, juez, y es un honor tenerlo aquí con nosotros.
Muchas gracias, decano. Dean Claudio Grossman, faculty authorities, writers, professors, students, ladies and gentlemen, I will talk about the challenges and obstacles in the pursuit of the prosecution of high officers and of Pinochet in Chile, explaining the different periods of the interpretation of the amnesty law that we thought would make it impossible to pursue criminals responsible of human rights violations. The crimes were crimes of torture, abduction, assassination. The forms were terrible. The forms of torture, hanging people from one hand, hanging people from both hands, hanging people from one foot, hanging people from both feet, hanging people in a way that things, objects, were put into their bodies, putting their heads into the water so they couldn't breathe, or putting plastic bags around their neck, which made them also lack of oxygen. That was called the dry submarine. Electricity being applied in different parts of the bodies of women and men, sometimes in front of their couple, in front of their husband, in front of the wife. They were naked and they suffered the most terrible humiliations. Tortures that consisted in taking the people's fingernails out of their fingers, violating women, introducing objects in the bodies of the men, utilizing mice that were put in the women's vagina, and you could imagine the horror that that meant and the sorrow that that those women felt. I could tell you at least 15 other forms of torture. Abduction. People that were walking in the street and just picked up because they were shown by comrades that had been dreadfully tortured. Officers of the Chilean army and armed forces in general, or of the police that entered in the homes, tore the furniture, opened all the books to see if there was communist, that was the word, communist propaganda. The at the same time, these people were kicked, pushed around, hit with the guns, and then taken to cars that had no license plates, and taken to houses where they continued to be tortured. Many died in torture. Assassination. The most frequent way of assassinating people was taking them to Puerto Montt. Today, looking at some archives that come from Guatemala, I realized that the methods are very similar. Instead of putting Puerto Montt, that meant death, it's a city in the southern part of Chile, there were in these Guatemalan books of people that were exterminated, numbers like 300 or words like given to God or given to the equivalent of God by another name. And that meant those people were really killed and were never seen anymore. The assassination. Most of these people, at least we know of 450, were killed and thrown in the Pacific Ocean. They were taken out of the houses of torture where they were. They had their stomachs opened so that they wouldn't float in the water. They were tied to railroad rails, and taken in the helicopters more than 10 miles into the Pacific Ocean, where they were thrown from a certain altitude. They were also shot. Many court-martials were invented without the defense of lawyers, and they were killed with no reason. Sometimes they had been already tried for other small misdemeanors, and there was the necessity of having these people killed, so they had to be tried twice in order to have them sentenced to death. Another form of killing people was saying that they had fled, that they had escaped, but they escaped, so many escaped, that I would say more than 500 people also were killed because they escaped. Others attacked soldiers, that is what it was said, but naturally there was no attack. I'm going to speak about the four periods of the interpretation of the amnesty law that was written or promulgated in 1978, and that was made in order to leave within impunity all the dreadful crimes that were committed in the worst years of our repression, that is, since September 1973 to April 1978. The four periods are called, according to the names I've been giving to them, the period of complete blindness, that is, since 1973 to 1978, the date of the amnesty law. The second period, I call it the period of absolute silence. The third, justice within possible or to the extent possible. That period went from 1990 to 1998. And finally, the fourth period, I call it the institutions are functioning, and it starts in 1998 and is the one that we are in Chile. In the first period of complete blindness, there was an absolute denial of crimes. The newspapers only showed and gave informations about soldiers or policemen being wildly attacked by terrorists. And every time we heard bullet sounds in the streets or in our rooms, in our homes, we would say, oof, one enemy less. We, the people in Chile, most of us believed that there were no human rights abuses to the extent that really happened. During that period, 1973 to 1978, secret police called DINA was created by Pinochet, and he was the direct chief of the office, even though he denies that to the day. You know all that in the day of the coup d'etat, of the coup, the armed forces bombed the presidential palace, the Moneda, raided factories, universities, and poor neighborhoods. There was only isolated resistance in some towns, in the suburbs of Santiago, Valparaiso, Concepcion. The rest of the country was under order. I'm speaking as militaries have told me, as soldiers have told me. The rest of the country was under order. The factories worked, the mines produced, business was done normally, etc. The military controlled then the whole country, but the killing continued. The military executed hundreds in the National Stadium and other detention sites. And when they saw that some officers or soldiers showed mercy to prisoners, they were considered traitors. The soldiers were considered traitors. So then Pinochet, in a moment, sent hardline officers to carry out the most infamous caravan of death, of which our dean has spoken a few minutes ago. It was a group of officers that flew in helicopters from the north, from Santiago to the south to Santiago, from Santiago to the north of the country. You know, it's a very long country. And from the north back to Santiago. And the objective, the goal of that caravana of death had two meanings: to kill the enemies and to harden the soldiers. The soldiers that were not harsh enough with prisoners themselves were considered men enemies or traitors. A few days after the coup, Pinochet created this DINA I spoke to you about. And some of the officers involved in the caravan of death became high officers in the DINA. For the next 5 years, 1973 to 1978, DINA abducted thousands of citizens and took them to one of the many detention centers, London, Londres, 38, José Domingo Cañas, the name of the streets, Villa Grimaldi, one of the worst places, and others. In these places, DINA agents tortured and murdered thousands of citizens and disappeared more than 1,000 victims. This was the worst period of violence and was one of total impunity. The courts of justice refused to honor habeas corpus petitions. And in the few cases of human rights violations that were investigated, these cases were sent to the hands of military tribunals, where they were finally, where they ended and they were archived. The military naturally refused to investigate or prosecute their people. Therefore, the pursuit of these crimes was unthinkable. Then comes the amnesty law of 1978, and I called this period the period of total silence or non-activity of the courts, of our justice. This amnesty law, you cannot really call it a law because it was not really enacted by Congress. The dictatorship had closed the Congress. The amnesty then covered the worst period, as I said, of the repression and the worst crimes of the dictatorship. Kidnapping, homicide, torture, forced disappearance. The logic behind the amnesty law was that the military had declared Chile to be in a state of war, and that war demanded the enemies to be eliminated. This logic justified illegal detention, torture, murder, and the disposal of bodies by burying them in secret graves or throwing them into the ocean. And the courts of justice applied the amnesty law ipso iure. How did this system of repression and of impunity work? First of all, the soldiers and the secret police carried out the repression. Then the military government denied the facts and gave false information to conceal the crimes committed in the name, on the name of national security. Then the judges simply accepted the false information, the disinformation and the lies, and applied the amnesty, as I said, ipso iure, immediately. Therefore, human rights cases were not investigated either. Finally, after the referendum, or plebiscite, of 1988, where Pinochet and the armed forces were defeated by our starting democracy, by the people. After this moment, when democracy starts once more, even if it is in an imperfect form, after 1990 to the date of 1998, this phase, I call it justice within possible, or justice to the extent possible. Paraphrasing an expression of our president, ex-president Patricio Aylwin, that said that the judges had to do justice to the extent possible. He was kind of annoyed. Naturally, he was the son of an honest judge that had gotten to the Supreme Court and had the best idea of what Chilean justice was until the dictatorship, where the judges became pusillanimous. And then President Patricio Aylwin said that the judges had lacked of moral courage. That was a nice way to say that the judges were cowards, had been cowards. At the same time, at the beginning of Patricio Aylwin's period that lasted only 4 years, Pinochet had warned the people and said, "No one will touch me. The day they touch one of my boys, the rule of law is ended." During Patricio Aylwin's presidency, there were many advances. First of all, the president created a National Commission of Truth and Reconciliation, which proved the truth about the repression. It restored the good name of the victims and recommended measures of reparation. Another good thing done during his period was the enactment of the Cumplido laws, named for the Minister of Justice, Francisco Cumplido, that limited the jurisdiction of military courts, bettered our laws, made law much more according to human rights. Even the judges started to apply in this period the constitution over the law and the international treaties as well over the law. The courts also began to apply the amnesty decree in a different manner. Aylwin had also said that this amnesty law needn't be applied immediately, that was an enormous injustice, that if you had to apply that amnesty, that auto amnesty, it was not impossible to investigate first to see what had happened, what was the truth, who committed the crimes, what extent those crimes had, who were the victims, how did they suffer, how were they killed, how were they tortured. So the judges thought that was the right interpretation of the amnesty law, and even though many times they started studying or investigating cases related with the crimes covered by the amnesty law, the judges said, okay, let us find out how these crimes were committed, who were the people that committed them, and then let us see whether we apply the amnesty law or not. the courts also conducted the first prosecutions and criminal trials of military officers. The most important prosecution involved the Letelier Muffet assassination in Washington, D.C. The director of the DINA and another officer were convicted for the crimes of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Muffet. Well, I could say many things about this period, but the important thing is the interpretation of the amnesty law. You remember that before, when a case was received in the office of a judge, if the crimes that were exposed in the complaint were those that were considered to be not instructed, or if the crimes were those covered by the amnesty law, the judges just put the case away, finished it, and archived it. In this period, the period of Elwin, the judges investigate and then they see whether they will apply the law or not. We hadn't had the experience yet. We don't know what the judges are going to do. The fourth period is the period that begins with the lawsuits against Pinochet, and it continues to the president. I call this period the one of the functioning of the institutions, paraphrasing President Lagos, who commented that now the institution, including the courts, are doing their jobs. There have been many landmarks in this last period. In January 1998, a complaint was filed in a case involving the disappearance of 16 people in 1976. The complaint accused Pinochet as involved in the crime. Later, I was selected by lottery to instruct the case, as you already heard, to conduct the criminal investigation. In March 1998, Pinochet retired as commander of the army and became senator with life tenure. In October, British authorities arrested Pinochet in London at the request of the Spanish judge Baltasar Garzón, who sought Pinochet's extradition to Spain to face trials of crimes against humanity. Spanish law grants its courts universal jurisdiction for such crimes. Pinochet was held in custody for 15 months until the Home Secretary decided to return Pinochet to Chile rather than to extradite him to Spain on the grounds of Pinochet's ill health. Pinochet returned to Chile in March 2000, but a few days after his return, I filed a motion to lift Senator Pinochet's parliamentary immunity from the prosecution in the caravan of death matter mentioned earlier. Both Santiago Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court of Justice voted to lift Pinochet's immunity, making it possible for his criminal indictment. Pinochet was indicted in December 2000 and again in January 2001 in caravan of death. The courts of appeals and the Supreme Court later voted to dismiss the charges against Pinochet on the grounds of Pinochet's mental incompetence to stand trial. But that did not end the investigations of other officers on the investigation of Pinochet in other cases. In fact, indictments were filed against a number of officers in the Caravana of Death and other cases as Operación Cóndor, Operación Colombo, Via Grimaldi, Via Baviera, the Charles Horman case, the Vice Filer case, and others. All the crimes were the same. The system of committing them were the same. Abduction, torture, death, habeas corpus, the denial of the habeas corpus by the courts of appeals, who accepted the excuses given by the government, saying that those people were not detained or had not been detained, and that they were not in prisons that belonged to the government, nor the army, nor the police. I call this the circle of death, where there were uniformed agents, where there were judges, where there were politicians, where there were medias. It is useful to say that in these causes, in these cases, not only soldiers or policemen have been indicted. Some Minister of the Interior agents also were indicted. I asked for the lifting of the immunity of a civilian called Sergio Fernandez that sent many letters to the courts of appeals denying the detention of people. I also indicted Montero Marx, a lawyer that works in the Mercurio. I didn't indict him because he worked in the Mercurio, though. And I indicted General Benavides, that was also Minister of the Interior, and that also gave false information to the courts about the detainment of people. The courts of appeal revoked, didn't give the lifting of the immunity of ex-Minister of Interior Fernandez, and revoked Montero Marx, another Minister of Interior, but maintained General Benavides' indictment. I don't understand the logics. It is very important to say that last December, the Supreme Court issued a historical ruling in the case of Miguel Ángel Sandoval, whom the secret police DINA disappeared in 1975. This ruling went much further than the rulings that we had done before, because as Dean Grossman said a few minutes ago, what permitted the judges to advance in the violations, in the cases for violations of human rights, was precisely that the kidnapping was considered to be a permanent crime. And as a permanent crime, we didn't know, the judges, whether the people had died or not, were killed or not during the period of the amnesty law, or whether they were still alive. Naturally, this seems to be a little bit fantastic, but it is very important to create the interpretation of law, or the creative interpretation of law. And if the facts that are proved are only the facts of the kidnapping, and we don't have evidence to realize or to have the conviction that these people were really killed, we have to stand for the crime that is actually within the cases. And we considered then that we had the right to investigate as long as none of those crimes had been really proved to be committed within the period of the amnesty law. I will say something about the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, when Pinochet's indictment was appealed, I had indicted Pinochet for 17 cases of kidnapping in Caravana of Death. And the Supreme Court, applying this idea that you have to investigate and afterwards apply the amnesty law, said, no, Mr. Guzman, you committed a mistake. It is true that there are 17 or 18 people that have been kidnapped and that continue kidnapped, but there are 58 people that were killed. So you have to investigate as well the murder of those people. So then it was possible to investigate the killing of 58 people and the abduction of the rest. In total, the victims were 75 in the caravan of death. The last days, we have had many surprises. In some cases, the judges decide that Pinochet is not mentally fit. In other cases, he is every day or every few days or every few months, there is a lifting of his immunity for new crimes. Now, as you heard before, his immunity was lifted by the Supreme Court in the case of the Riggs Bank. We don't know what's going to happen. It is possible that he could be indicted. It is possible that he won't be indicted, because I don't know how a person could be not mentally competent for some cases, for the killing of people, and for other cases he could be mentally competent, as for the bank affairs. What have been the main obstacles the judges have had in the investigation of these cases of human rights? First of all, the lawyers have used all the possible tricks and strategies to avoid trials. They have not only litigated against the opposite party, but they have done all they could to get the judge out of their way, inventing false accusations, pleading of lack of impartiality, hatred towards the defendants, especially hatred towards Pinochet. That has been one of the reasons by why constantly the lawyers, Pinochet's lawyers, have asked that I should be removed from these cases, because I hated Pinochet, and that was evident. I don't think I have ever hated a person in my life. The government also interfered with pressure, direct pressure. The Supreme Court has harassed the judges that went too far or that showed what had happened during these terrible years. They say judges should only write decisions, but they shouldn't say nor invite the media to see what they are discovering. As in Chile, half of the people didn't believe or didn't want to believe the crimes that had been committed. Some of the judges, amongst them myself, we took the medias to the graves. We took them to the cemeteries. We took them to the places where they had been, the people had been killed, and the medias took photographs and videos of the soldiers pretending to be handling a rifle or a machine gun. So then the people, our Chileans, and perhaps many people in the world that perhaps didn't believe what had happened, I think this was a sin mostly committed in Chile, realized that there had been killing, abductions, and torture. So it was necessary. The judges don't only have to write sentences, they have to show sometimes the people, especially in cases like this, what happened, what the truth was. A wounded country needs to know the truth. Afterwards, it needs justice before reconciliation. The medias also played the game of the government, played the game of the Pinochetistas, played the game of their own conveniences. Now, I have been appointed dean, as Dean Grossman said a few minutes ago, of the School of Law in Chile, the Universidad Central in Santiago, and I have much more liberty of expression. I therefore am becoming an activist of human rights and have formed or invented, I don't know the right word in English, an institute of human rights in this university, in the Central University. So this is going to be perhaps one of the many things that we're going to do together in the future. And for you, dear friends, and for our people, good luck, God bless you, and thank you very much.
Yash Guzman would is willing to answer questions if there are questions, comments. Please do.
You interrogated Augusto Pinochet, and you also interrogated the head of the Chilean secret police, Manuel Contreras. I'm wondering if you could share with us what that was like.
Oh, sure. Well, it's difficult to judge people when you're not in the work, when you're not doing the job of a judge. Judges do have to judge, but I'm no longer a judge, and I don't have the right to judge people. But I'll tell you my impression. It is difficult to say this, but Manuel Contreras did the dirty work. He ordered the dirty work, that's evident. But in a way, he's a man of honor. I think he, in his way of thinking, in the Prussian formation of our army, and with the loyalty he worked for Pinochet, I think he thought that he was doing the proper thing, fighting against the enemy within. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say that. After all, he was the head of the DINA, and the DINA is responsible for more than 3,000 people killed and 1,000 people that continue missing. But I at least have that respect for Contreras. For Pinochet, I cannot say the same. I think he, I'll use the word in Spanish, reptó. Reptar.
Kidnapped.
No. Caminar como culebra.
Ah, yes. Like a reptile, I mean.
Yes. Slithered. Slithered. Tremenda palabra. Yes. I think Pinochet slithered all the way up to be a dictator. He was servile with Orlando Letelier when Orlando was Minister of Defense. He was servile and obsequent with his superiors, with President Allende. But when he went up to the top, he was the worst. He was the cruelest person that could exist. It's very curious. I think really that he is a coward. So if you ask me if I have more respect for him than for Contreras, I say I do not have any respect for Pinochet at all. He, when I asked him, Mr. General, or General, did you order those crimes to be committed? He said, no, I'm not an assassin. I never ordered anything like that. The people under me committed those crimes. And when I asked them in the frame of the Operación Condor whether he had formed that organism called the Operación Condor, a form of Pan-Americanism of the crime, he said, no, I was working in important things. I had to do with relations with Argentina, with Peru, and other countries, and I didn't have to do anything with things that were less important. There, I agree absolutely with Dean Grossman. I don't think that Pinochet was less smarter than when he was many years ago. I think he really thought that way. What impression did Manuel Contreras make to me? Well, the impression of an ordinary soldier. Good education, good manners, lots of personality, firm character. What did Pinochet, how did he impress me? The first time I saw him, well, like what he's always been, a cunning person, like we say in Chile, the owner of a fundo. A fundo is a piece of land. He treats everybody as he was the owner of the fundo, and as the rest of us were the people that labor in that fundo. Very paternalistic?
Yeah.
Yes, very paternalistic. the first time he was nice with me, surely he believed that I was not going to indict him, because he was absolutely convinced that he was untouchable. The second time that I had already indicted him once, he was not agreeable with me, and he started by asking me, look, you know that we go to their homes because dictator laws made the world differently as it should be. Instead of having the culprits go to the office of the judge, to the courthouse, in the case of the generals, the judges have to go to their homes. So we're not in our own territory. It's kind of disagreeable to go to a place where people are going to be harsh with you, don't say hello, give you not greet you as an adult or as a person with good education. It's kind of difficult to have el mundo al revés, or to live in el mundo al revés. So the second time, when my secretary was preparing the computer to be able to interrogate him, he said, well, ¿y cuándo empezamos? No, when are we going to begin? Well, I said, look, General, you have to be patient. These things, technology is not so quick as it should be. And well, he continued with a frown in his forehead. I don't know. Pinochet didn't impress me at all.
Thank you, Oprah. Judge, I wonder, in a situation in which so many people were intimidated and did not continue forward as you did, I wonder what you see as the reasons that you did continue forward. Just the historical moment, or commitment, indignation, foolishness, what? Thank you.
Thank you for saying that I continued, because many people say I didn't continue. The truth is that I wanted to be in the judicial power till the age of 65 to do other things in my life. And then the truth is that when I asked for Pinochet's second, when I asked for the second lifting of Pinochet's immunity, the Court of Appeals of Santiago accepted my petition. And that was when I was already 65 years old. So then I said, look, I cannot leave the boat now that the court has given Pinochet's or granted Pinochet's lifted Pinochet's immunity. Now I have to see what the Supreme Court says. If the Supreme Court says that confirms that decision, I will have to stay and indict him again. And the Supreme Court in October that year, I believe, 2004, the Supreme Court in the month of August, I believe, confirmed the decision of the Appellate Court of Santiago and decided that Pinochet's immunity had to be lifted. Then I said, well, I know how it is difficult to interrogate Pinochet. I know how difficult it is to have him have the examinations, the mental examinations or expertise. And other judges are going to have problems doing it, because I had hundreds of problems. It took me, I would say, more than 4 or 5 months after the lifting of the first immunity of Pinochet to be able to indict him. So I said, look, I'm going to stay and try to indict him at least. Until I did. I waited many times. It was impossible that I should interrogate him because he was sick, because I hated him, and I couldn't interrogate him because of many things that were thought by the lawyers that they were going to use in order to avoid me interrogating him. But finally, one day I said, I have to be more cunning than these guys, and I'm going to decide a Friday night an order that I should go to Pinochet's house Friday night when the appellate court is closed and where they will have no opportunity to stop my going to Pinochet's house. So the Sunday came, I mean this Friday came, I ordered that I should go and visit him. I visited him, I interrogated him, and after that I sent him to the examinations, the medical examinations, and decided that he was really, according to the information I received, or the information I mostly believed, and the facts I saw, because I saw him in an interview in the TV where he speaks about 15 different issues, and you realize that he is a man that thinks, knows, remembers, knows the difference between what's good and bad or doesn't, has abstract thoughts, and is able to know what is good for him and what is bad for him. So I got convinced by what I heard from him in the two occasions I was with him, by what I heard in this interview to a lady, a Cuban lady that has a program in Florida. And I also read the affidavit of Pinochet's declaration taken in Juez Muñoz, in Judge Muñoz's case for the Riggs Bank. And I am very honest to tell you that I am absolutely convinced that Pinochet, at least at the time that I indicted him, was absolutely normal mentally. With the problems of a man that's 88 or 89 years old, but much more normal than half of the people that are in our prisons. Did I answer the question well, or did something stay in the... Yes? Oh, I'll tell you about the courage. I honestly think, do girls fight when they're small? Yes? Well, remember...
In school, they do.
They do, yes.
This is gender neutral school.
I'll tell you, I remember when I was a kid and I got in a fight. I didn't like to fight, but sometimes you got in a fight, somebody kicked you and you had bad temper and you hit back, and then a fight, a quarrel started, and you hit, and you were hit back and all that. You don't feel the
punch.
The punches you receive. It's something like that. When you're in something like a investigation and all that, you feel the emotion of the investigation. But I didn't feel any fright. I was not frightened of anything, except that my family may suffer a sort of attack. But they always had, at least my two daughters had bodyguards. I had bodyguards, and my mother, my wife never accepted to have bodyguards. But I don't think I ever felt any, how do you say, fright? Fear, yes.
Hi, I was wondering why you think the Concertación defended Pinochet while he was in London, and if you think that they've kind of went against their own values, that they won the plebiscite and then the election, the later elections with, like, they said that there would be justice and truth, and so why did, would they not want to prosecute Pinochet?
This is a very difficult question to answer, but the truth is that the Concertación promised the world in when Pinochet was in Spain, in England, that if he was taken to Chile and tried by his own laws, that it was going to be guaranteed that he was going to be tried. Well, I don't believe in all the politicians, you know. But those were politicians, the ones that said, that promised that. The truth is that Presidente Lagos, who is a very respected president and has the popularity in Chile that no other president has had at the end of his mandate. It says that the institutions work, that they function. I think they don't. I think they seem to function, but they don't function well. I do not understand, really, why I have been pressured by the government, because as a Chilean and as a judge, I consider that the best thing that could have happened in Chile would have been that we should show the world that Pinochet was liable to be judged in Chile. We have the judges. We have the system that makes it possible for him to be judged. I think there was no political will to have him judged, and I think that the Supreme Court received influences from the government, perhaps from other entities, and today we have shown the sensation that our justice does not work as it should work, that is, that the institutions do not function as they do have to function.
We'll take the last question. Yes.
Judge, given the advanced age of the general right now, saying in the very near future, if he is legitimately not available anymore, I mean, meaning that if he dies, do you think that the Chilean society, through your efforts and through other efforts of the courts and prosecutors, has, do you think the society has taken a sufficiently hard look at itself and has dealt with its past in order to go forward?
Do I think the society has taken a hard look at itself?
Has it come to terms with what has actually happened in its recent past? You had mentioned there was a period when it seemed like everyone was blind to what was going on. Do you think that the Chilean society has been able to take a good hard look at what has happened and in its recent past?
I think that one of the reasons why some of the judges in these cases wanted to be very mediatic, you say, very mediatic, was to convince the people what had happened, as I said before, because many, I would say half of the people in Chile easily did not believe the degree of evil that had been produced during those years. They knew that many bizarre things had happened, but they didn't know the entity of the evil, of the violation of human rights and all the forms of torture and all the forms of killing and all the forms of being inhuman with the people. They didn't know really how much that was. I think that the people in Chile are traditionally divided. They were even divided before Pinochet's era. So I think that in Chile we have many talks between people do not hear or do not want to hear. The sensation I have is that those who were Pinochetistas continue Pinochetistas, that those who were nothing, that were just ordinary people that worked day to day, know a little bit more what happened. And the people that fought for human rights, at least they have the conscience absolutely clear and clean that they worked for something that was real, that was not propaganda, and that was not, as many people say, to receive money from abroad and to go to do trips and have fun and visit their friends in the exile where they're having lots of fun, you know. I really think that human rights issues haven't changed our people in Chile. I think that these issues related with Riggs Bank have touched our people more. In our country, I think the wallet is more important than life.
I want to thank Yash Guzman for his presentation today and for his courage, as Yash embodies the highest, really he's one of the role models for the profession. We don't know of any other way to solve peacefully disputes and to go to an independent judge. And he certainly represents the highest standards of the profession. We have a small present for you, Judge, and thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We have a reception outside.